Today's program has been brought to you by Heritage Foods USA, the nation's largest distributor of heritage breed pigs and turkeys. For more information, visit heritagefoodsusa.com.
Broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn, you're listening to heritageradionetwork.org.
All right, it is 3 p.m. on Thursday, and that means it's time to meet your maker. I am your host, Rachel Wharton. With me in the studio today is my pretty frequent co-host, John Taggart. And say hello, John.
Hey, what's up?
So this is a very, very special Meet Your Maker because we have no guest today. I've been mentally preparing for this occasion, hopefully, for someone to drop out at the last second for weeks now. So rest assured, you've got 30 minutes of incredible listening up ahead. And I actually wanted to start by letting you know that, speaking of makers, the theme song that you just heard is actually Huntronic, the band from John's band. And they are playing September 2nd at the Rock Rippers, which is a combination of Roberta's and the Meat Hook. So you should check that out if you liked what you heard. And I also wanted to bring that up because this is my plan. I'm going to turn the tables on my co-host, John Taggart. This is Brooklyn. So Meet Your Maker we interview people about how they came to do what they do, why they make ketchup, why they make plastic plates, why they make hams. And we like to get nerdy about the way that they make it. The little details. We had a seed maker in last week, and he told us how he threshes and how you have to. We didn't get to talk about the most interesting thing, which is how you have to actually cover certain plants with netting so that there isn't cross pollination, so you keep your seeds true. Okay, I'm rambling because what I'm going to do today is I'm going to turn the tape. This is Brooklyn. We're in Brooklyn. Every single one of us has a dream. We want to be a maker. We're at Roberta's. Everyone wants to be a maker. I interview a ketchup maker. I interview jam makers. Deep down, I want to make food just like they do. And so does John. John, his full-time job, he is a breaking news and crime photographer for the Daily News, which seems like it would totally fill any kind of creative void. However, okay, John, if you could do anything for a living, if you could make any food for a living, what would it be?
Of course, it would be a salsa verde as well. You know,
that was, yes.
You know, that's definitely...
Talking to your mic.
That's definitely the thing.
You should know this by now.
Salsa verde. So tomatillas are beautiful.
Yes. So since I spend a lot of time with this person, I know that he overbuys tomatillos. He'll go to the Meat Hook and buy up every single one they have, and then he'll go in a store 3 hours later and do the same thing again.
Well,
that you can make salsa verde.
Well,
I've a batch in the house.
I made great salsa verde, and you know this, of any tomatilla from any market. But product does, you know.
But start at the beginning.
Quality does matter.
Tell us how this passion, how did this come to be?
Well, I always loved tomatoes, and I always had a passion to make salsa verde.
Wait, but there's a place. There's a genesis of this passion.
Oh yeah, well, there's a restaurant that I frequent in Brooklyn. It's called La Superior. My friend Philippe owns it. It's a Mexican restaurant, and he makes this.
He's from Mexico City.
Yeah, he makes Mexico City style enchilada suizas, which is basically you infuse heavy cream and you pretty much blend tomatillas with all the love and ingredients that go into it, and you
make a salsa verde first, and then you add cream.
You make a salsa verde first, but you have to sift it so that there's no seed or product from.
Wait.
What?
So I think let's start by describing a freaking tomatillo. How it's different from a tomato.
Well, it's tangy. You don't actually bite.
It's like a little gooseberry. Yeah, it's like a big gooseberry.
Yeah, it's sweet. It's tangy. It depends. Like the smaller ones are sweeter.
So the salsa verde. If you frequent a Mexican restaurants, which you should, salsa verde is the green salsa. Although a lot of times it's almost primarily jalapeno, but sometimes so it's like tomatillos can be sweet.
It's the most underrated thing I think in the world,
and I think
now it's becoming more popular. Definitely, since they're at Meat Hook and they sell them at Green Grape.
Yes, and sometimes you see salsa verde with avocado.
And those are tomatillos from Lancaster County, you know.
Yes. So, I mean, you can get, like, fat ones. You can get little tiny baby purple ones, which are more common in Mexico. Okay. So, you basically have to make your salsa verde before you can make your enchilada suizas.
Yeah, there's lots of different things you can do. When you put the heavy cream, what's the matter, Rachel?
Oh, I was just going to say that since you make enchilada suizas and salsa verde so often, I have done research trying to figure out where this dish came to be. Because it's kind of, you take a quesadilla, you basically wrap a flour tortilla around chicken, you smother it with this creamy salsa verde, and then you slather it with a melty cheese, which is not really, that's way more like Tex-Mex, like the way Americanized version, yet it's this traditional dish that's served all over Mexico City. We should actually call up...
Mostly Central Mexico.
We should call up Philippe
in
Las Pira right now and get him on the phone, but I think I've asked him. So I was curious, like, and it's kind of one of those dishes, like so many dishes that fascinate people, that no one really knows. So there, where it came from, there's like disputing stories, and one of them is, I think there's this really beautiful little chain of breakfast joints, luncheonettes in Mexico City. Someone call in and correct me if I'm totally wrong, but so they're Swiss owned.
Yeah, well, when people,
which is, and Suiza is Swiss, and it's the slathered cheese on top,
right?
That's what I've heard.
Well, when people think of Mexican food, the last thing they think of is you know, anything with tomatillas. You know, they don't know what, you know, they think the salsa verde is, most people think it's just a green tomato, you know.
Well, is it?
It is, but I mean, it's totally different, you know, it's totally different from a tomato.
Yeah, it's sweet and tart. Yeah. They're ridiculous. They're totally underused. Someone should be making tomatillo ice cream.
Well, you know, I make it all the time, and I'm getting better and better every time I make it. I've been doing this, for about maybe 3.5 years now. I've been almost 4 years I've been making this stuff almost every week.
Okay, so tell us how you make it.
Oh, it's easy. It's, you know, you go and get your product. You get jalapeno. You get some white onion. Make sure it's white onion. You
know, Why white?
I don't know. I just think they blend better. They're sweeter.
They're less acrid, less acidy.
Yeah, because you have plenty of acid from the tomatillas.
Which are, yes. Okay, and then what next?
Cilantro, salt, lime juice, put it in a, what's the thing that we use? It's a
Vitamix?
Yeah, the Vitamix is good.
Which is like a totally redonkulously awesome blender, which I somehow managed to scrape the money to get a couple of years ago. This blender is so powerful. It's the home version of the Vita Prep.
Yeah, blending is important. Blending is really important.
But this blender is so strong. Okay, there's two things you can do in this blender. This is going to be a digression. You can, if you take frozen fruit, I actually used a bag of frozen peaches from Met Foods. But if you take, I learned this the hard way. Don't freeze peaches whole. You have to take the seeds out first, or else it's really hard to get them out once they're frozen. But freeze about a pound of any fruit, throw it in your Vitamix, and add a small carton, 2 cups of cream.
Well, Rachel,
a little sugar. Wait, let me finish.
No.
And then you hit blend, and it freaking becomes ice cream.
Okay, well, tell them what a Vitamix is. It's like
it's crazy. You've seen it when you've gotten your wheatgrass smoothie from your. It's the same. It's like a professional.
Yeah, but not everybody
user.
Knows what a Vitamix is, Rachel.
It's the master blender that like all the juice places have.
Yes.
So the number one thing you can do with it is you can freaking make ice cream in 2 seconds because you put the frozen fruit in. And then you add 2 cups of heavy cream, which also play a role in salsa verde. And then you hit blend, and it becomes 4, where each of those spines are for the blender blade, it becomes 4 perfect scoops of peach ice cream. I'm not kidding. It totally worked. The other thing you can do, you can take cooked chickpeas and add whole sesame seeds.
So you're basically
and tahini,
saying
and it makes hummus. You don't have to use tahini. You can use whole sesame seeds instead. It blends it perfectly.
So I can start my whole salsa verde business off of this Vitamix.
No, because I think I've talked to a bunch of people who run juice companies, and they burn out really quickly. And they have a version with the motor. So if you made salsa verde, if you followed the dream, quit your job, like a job that everyone wants as a actual photographer for a major newspaper, to make salsa verde for a living, you'd probably have to invest in some hardcore blenders.
Yeah, because I mean,
because that's all you'd be doing.
A Vitamix is expensive.
You'd be blending on like an hourly basis. Yeah. Okay, back to the salsa verde.
Well, you know, it's a very simple thing to make. It does not take a lot of thought. It just takes a lot of practice over and over and over and over and over. And
I feel like we left off at onion. What comes after that?
Did I say jalapeno? Okay, so of course tomatillas. You blanch them. You want to blanch them first. You can do it. You can put them in raw, but I like to blanch them, you know, for about 2 minutes in boiling water, and then take them out, and then put them in the blender, four or five at a time, and blend them, and then keep blending till they, you know, become a pulp, and then after that, I added jalapeno because I want to add the jalapeno first.
Why?
Because I think with the tomatillas and the jalapeno together, before everything else, you want to get your spice right. You don't want it too hot. You don't want it too... You want to have some kick to it, but not a lot, you know, because that's my personal preference.
Also, it all depends on the jalapeno.
And I put everything. I put the seeds and everything in. You know?
I mean, some salsa verde is like half jalapeno.
And I'm getting wicked killer jalapenos from Lancaster County lately.
At Roberta's, at Meat Hook Brooklyn Kitchen.
Yeah. They.
You mean they're hot?
Oh, yeah, they're beautiful. They're massive, and they have all these just great qualities about them that it's hard to find because you go to a bodega and they're all dried up and like wilted and they've been sitting there for months.
And they're cracked.
Yeah.
Those are probably actually from Mexico.
Well, I mean, that's not, they're just old, you know?
Right. Well, yeah, because they had to get here from
but
Mexico.
See, nobody buys them, you know?
Okay. Well, I mean, yes, they do.
Well, I was just in Meat Hook, and they said that their tomatillas aren't selling as good as they planned.
Really?
Yeah.
But like based on previous sales, meaning you having been by there twice in 1 week.
I go in there and I fill up 2 bags of them.
It's ridiculous. You know. I mean, I don't know what else I would do with them other than make salsa verde. Oh, we stewed chicken in them once. That was pretty freaking awesome.
Well, what did we make the other day? We made is that what you're talking about?
Mm-hmm.
The verde chicken
Chile
stew?
Chicken.
Yeah. Yeah, we put tortilla chips in there. It was basically like a chilaquiles with chicken in it, you know?
And it was freaking awesome.
We didn't even need cheese.
Okay, so Suiza's, you've made your salsa verde.
Yeah.
And then what do?
Yeah, are you talking about Suiza's or salsa verde?
Suiza's.
Oh.
Because we've tried it. We have tried to, without doing very much research or even asking the guy who makes it from scratch, we've tried to reproduce the creamy salsa verde at La Superior. And so tell me the different ways in which you've tried.
Well, I've tried. So I've given up a few times. You know, when I did it, it was fun to give up because then I learned more from that.
You've given wait, like in
when
what
I when
way?
I just didn't sift it. You know, I
you
just,
mean like put the salsa verde through a sieve or a colander.
Exactly. I did not care. I just put it on, you know, and I was like, this is going to be it, you know, and then I just stopped doing that. I was like, oh, I need to add some cream, you know, so I started adding the heavy cream to it.
Doesn't it separate or curdle?
You got to do it real quick.
That's how?
Yeah, you put the cream
in. Do it off the heat?
Okay, so once you sift it, it's going to take you a good 15 minutes to sift a whole Vitamix thing of salsa verde.
It's like such a waste.
It takes a long time. But all that pulp you save for later.
Right. You know? Can actually use that as like a very dry.
So all the liquid that's dripping out.
Tomatillo
juice. You put that into a skillet and you heat it up and you let it cook for a while. Then you dump in your cream and then there you go. You have a sweet, creamy, delicious sauce that you put over top your tortillas or your chicken or your whatever you want, you know?
So if I had sometimes actually you see Suiza's as it's literally just enchilada. It's literally just covered with cheese. Like there's no creamy salsa verde. It's whatever the hell they want to do. But yeah. In San Francisco, I think Suiza's is when you get a giant quesadilla covered with cheese.
Right.
So that's why I think Suiza's to a lot of Mexicans has like kind of been bastardized to just mean like a bunch of melty ass cheese on top.
Well, yeah, if that was going to be my
comment. I wish someone could just call in and tell me how wrong I am. Let me know.
If that was going to be my maker, that was my company, it would be Salsa Verde, not Suiza's.
Suiza's. That would just make on the side. That would be the recipe that you included on the label.
Yeah. I mean, I would love to make a verde, you know, that's like Brooklyn. No one does that now, you know?
Yes.
No one's doing that. I should trademark that. No.
Yes, you should. That's the whole point of the show.
Exactly.
So we're going to take a break, and then we're going to come back with more of Meet Your Potential Maker, where I think I'm going to talk about what I would do.
Yeah.
See you in two.
Every August for the past 10 years, Heritage Foods USA has had the great honor of announcing the arrival of a new generation of Good Shepherd Ranch Heritage Turkeys and a new chapter in the history of an endangered species. You have to eat them to save them. While many farmers now use the term, Frank Reese and his team raised the truest example of the original heritage turkey. According to the USDA, they remain the only farm allowed to use the name Heritage on their label. We hope you reserve your healthy, naturally mating, flying, standard bronze, bourbon red, white Holland, slate, black, or Narragansett turkey today. Let's do it again and support the brightest hope for the turkey. We guarantee these are the best tasting turkeys ever, or your money back. Prices start at $75. For more information, visit heritagefoodsusa.com.
Back to Meet Your Maker. This is a very special Meet Your Maker. We are guest free today. We are going guest free, aren't we, John?
Yeah, we are.
And we're turning the microphones upon ourselves, pretending we're the makers, talking about what product would we make if we were so inspired to do so, and getting geeky about the details to do it. John, we were talking about salsa verde, which you brought.
Yeah, I brought some. If anybody wants to have some, you know, Rachel.
You mean me?
Yeah.
It's conveniently way over the other side.
I'm actually going to be dipping Roberta's pizza into it. That's how good it is. We have the Millennium Falco here today, which has onions and sausage on it. It's like kind of perfect. You can put salsa verde on everything. You really can. What?
No, it's just funny. I mean, you really, truly make it you make it when you still have some left over.
Yeah,
I've never. It's like this. You just are obsessed with it.
Well, you know, it's like you know, people who like to make jam or jelly, they love that. You know, I care less about jelly. You
it's
know?
Like the making it you enjoy almost much more than the.
I mean, I like and respect jelly, but
you like and respect jelly.
I can never make it. I would never care about making it.
You know? Actually, I'm trying to remember. So, I believe Brooklyn Grange, which is actually in Queens, which is a rooftop farm, which started here in the top of Roberta's, and I think Roberta's is actually a founder. They have heap loads of, I always thought it was shisho that was their secret ingredient, but I found out recently that it's cilantro seeds, because they save the seeds from the cilantro when it goes to seed. So instead of using actual green cilantro throughout the winter, they're just grinding up the which is actually the same thing we would buy in the store as coriander.
Yeah.
And it's like the most amazing salsa verde. I think it might come close to yours, because it's got this crazy kick. And also, I swear that Ben, who actually is the farmer, used shisho, which is like the purple fluttery Japanese herb.
Remember you brought it home that one
time? Yeah. I drank it from the jar.
Yeah. I thought it was good.
Yes. Yeah. That's really... So if you were... If I asked you this question when you were 12, what food product, what would you have gone into business making then?
Well, like, you know, I grew up eating like tongue and liver and like organs.
That's what it would have been. Wouldn't have been that though.
No. I wouldn't have made it. I would have figured out a way to, you know, make it, you know, marketable. I guess, you know, because now it's like
that's what you would have. You wouldn't have like gone into business making peanut butter and jelly sandwiches or something.
I would have gone into business and making peanut butter.
Really?
Yeah.
I'm glad that you brought that up.
Because my dad would always have a jar of peanut butter somewhere.
Hidden?
You know, and he would always have it as like, you know, because it's great steakout food.
Yeah,
you know,
because that's what you do for a living,
right? Yeah, we steak places out, so like, you know, peanut butter will never go bad. It's always in, you know,
you can eat it with your like any body part.
You can eat it with like a pack of crackers you have with you. I mean, whatever, you know.
Well, I'm glad you brought up peanut butter, because that was actually the third thing you can make with the Vitamix, the most important salsa verde tool. Making peanut butter, it separates. I mean, you understand why commercial peanut butter has sugar and salt and everything else added to it, because it separates pretty easily.
Mm-hmm.
And it's really hard to get it that super smooth. Like commercial peanut butter is like this really strange consistency where it can almost move around on its own. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like it can bend over. It's like very pliable, which like this silky smoothness that like you do not get when you just mix peanuts and salt in your Vitamix.
Or Rachel,
you can still do it.
Let me ask you something. So, you know, what would the host what? Want to make?
The hostess?
What would you, yeah, what would you, what would
tomato
you?
Tomato cheese. Yeah. Okay, so I've been a food writer for a while, yeah. And the only recipe, I interview other people about what they make and what they cook, and then I get recipes from them and run those. That's what I've always done. And the only recipe that's ever been run under my own name was for pimento cheese in Sephora, maybe this time last year. The first time ever. And then, I think their test kitchen, they helped a little bit. But so it's the only thing of mine that's, it's like the dish I make all the time and when I have to go to a party. I don't even think you've ever had it.
Yeah, you made it one time.
Yeah. You know? Because I can't, it's like salsa verde, except that it's made from cheese and mayonnaise, so it's a really bad idea to eat it all the time. Mm. Although I think newer nutritional theories, believe that all fats are good.
Yeah.
Except for maybe trans fats. I just learned this recently.
Oh, yeah. Salsa verde is very good for you, by the way.
Yes, it is. Pimento cheese, for those who are not from the South or live in Brooklyn now where Southern comfort food is insanely popular, is essentially, I mean, it started out as hoop cheese, which they sold in all those country stores. Like they'd get a big block of almost tasteless cheddar from the North, I think, and it would sit around in those country stores. There's actually, my sister lives in rural North Carolina, and there's actually one of these country stores near her house where this hoop cheese, they still get, it's called hoop cheese. I should probably know why it's called hoop cheese. It's probably,
well, what do you use it with?
Well, like, pimento cheese or hoop cheese?
Pimento cheese. What do you put it on?
I've launched into the full form. But so it was originally made with this tasteless hoop cheese, uh-huh. And then it was made with cheese product, mm-hmm. or really mild cheddar, and mixed with mayonnaise, like in the South can be often be very sweet, and with pimentos, which is this type of pepper that is pickled and or roasted, the pimento pepper, which is where it gets its name. So that's like the classic Southern pimento cheese is kind of tasteless. It's all about like mayonnaise and I mean, I've seen it with grated Velveeta, so it's like this kind of like ridiculously.
Have you had the Velveeta version?
Yeah, and I even like, I mean, it's like pizza to me, like all of it's good. It's like, I eat pimento cheese has a special place in my heart. But I always make it, like everyone in my family's always made it with the sharpest cheddar. And so like, traditionally, I think Southern cooks would say, oh, you don't, it's like, don't waste your bourbon on a mixed drink, like use a lesser rye for your Manhattan, save the good stuff for sipping. And it's the same with cheese, like save the Cracker Barrel for an appetizer platter, like don't ever use that in your pimento cheese because you're mixing it with mayonnaise. But so it started out with this crappy hoop cheese, and every Southern salad is mixed with mayonnaise. But in the South, people add hard-boiled eggs. They add all kinds of shit. They add cream cheese. You name it. It's like they add all kinds of pickles, anything in there. Olives, like the olives that are green and orange.
But is pimento cheese the one thing that you could see yourself doing as a business?
Yeah, actually, I mean, for me, it's very serious. Because there's a couple of companies that market it nationally. Mm-hmm. One is called Callie's, I believe. And she was really well known for making biscuits, like little cookies and little biscuits and selling them around the country. And I remember meeting her at the Fancy Food Show 5 or 6 years ago. And it was before there was so much interest in Southern food around the rest of the country. And so she was one of the first to sell specialty foods from that region, mm-hmm. to get any mainstream success. I should be calling her up right now. She's an actual maker. And I just noticed that she started a line of pimento cheese. I saw it in the Green Grape Provisions, which is a really, really nice specialty food shop here in Brooklyn.
Yeah, it's really awesome.
So that means that all these people are tasting wine right outside. So that means that like fancy food buyers in Brooklyn are buying pimento cheese, which is like this gloppy, mayonnaise-y, amazing, beautiful mess. Oh, but so how I make mine, so like I was like, and for years I thought that was the one. And there was another Southern writer, she was a writer, and she had kind of a blog where it was all about her as like a Southern belle, and she marketed a pimento cheese that they sold at Murray's Cheese for a while, which was very good. And but I think she got married and she wrote for the Daily News for a while, so she's not selling anymore. So I was like, that's it.
Mm-hmm.
There's like no one making it here artisanally, because of course any New Yorker locavore worth their hand-harvested Long Island sea salt is going to want the pimento cheese to be local, right? So, like, the opportunity's there for me. Oh, but anyway, so here we go, we'll go through my recipe. So, first of all, my grandmother always uses jalapenos. You can use a chili. So we always grew up putting fresh chili in there and a little bit of grated garlic. Like, not chopped, but, like, actually grated or even juiced. So it's, like, run over like a rasp like you'd use now to do Parmesan cheese. Mm-hmm. And so, but what I found is that in Brooklyn, where there are in other parts of the country where you can get Trinidad peppers from, you can get Scotch bonnets and other peppers from the Caribbean, which have this weird floral, awesome kick to them, that you, if you add that, it's like and it's also kind of appropriate because the pimento is a kind of Caribbean cheese, and they actually make a version of pimento cheese in the Philippines that they call cheese pimento, which is really fascinating. So like that floral kick is like kind of true to like where it came from, but it's like adds all this amazing flavor. And so I add those when I can. And the other thing I add is Rick's Picks Peppy Pep Peps, which is like one of the few makers. In fact, he's going to be on here maybe next week. He's our scheduled guest. And he's now in Whole Foods and Williams-Sonoma. Mm. And he's just had to expand his business to where he's had to buy new jars, and that's what we're going to talk about.
Do you try and dry them out as much as you can, then put them in? Or do you just put them in?
Back in my weight, when I was like trying to cut down on calories, I would like strain out. I would keep the juice from his Peppy Pep Peps and add that instead of a lot of mayonnaise to my pimento cheese. But now I stopped doing that. I just like drink the juice from the Peppy Pep Peps. These are like his pickled. They're like garlic and other spices, pickled red peppers, not pimentos per se. So I use them. And I use some kind of Caribbean Trini Scotch bonnet pepper that has that crazy citrus floral note. And my grandmother, I was seriously thinking about, like, you know, this is way before Smorgasburg or even the Flea. I don't know what I was going to do, sell on the sidewalk, but or Murray's cheese. So I was asking my grandmother how she made it. My grandmother's from Louisiana. And so, you know, you expect like this come to Jesus moment from your grandmother, and my grandmother's like, oh, I grate it and then I put it in the Cuisinart. but that was a very important thing. So she did, it was two steps. Mm-hmm. So that's actually what the test kitchen at Savoir confirmed, because they did a bunch of tests. It's like, if you just grate it and then mix the mayonnaise in, it doesn't blend together the right way. Like it's like grated cheese floating in mayonnaise, so it's like hard and soft. And then if you run it through the Cuisinart, like everything blends up a bit and it becomes like this, they become one. But my grandmother also told me that she used to make it with her meat grinder. This is before you had, it's like an easy way to grate cheese. There was no other way to do it in quantity. So I actually had a meat grinder. Still do. I have two. One very rusty that I hang my hat on. I totally stole that idea from Brooklyn Kitchen, by the way, to like put them, you screw them to a shelf and you can use the handles as a hook. But so you put it through the meat grinder and it makes these amazing snake-like, fluffy, beautifully fluffy strands of cheese. And then you mix that with the mayonnaise and it's like, it's exactly the way Winn-Dixie made it, you know, back in the 80s when I was eating it from Piggly Wiggly and Winn-Dixie. Anyway, so now when I have lots of time to kill and the desire to clean an implement that's a pain in the ass to clean, I will meat grinder it. And if not, grate it and then put it really quickly in the Cuisinart. Done. And it's like the greatest thing on earth.
Why do you like it so much?
I don't know. It's like mayonnaise and cheese and like brine and pickle.
I'm not asking you like as in like why do you like it. I know why you like it and why everyone loves
amazing.
It.
It's amazing. You know, it's so easy to make. It's good. It's good cold. Right. It's good hot. It's good melty. But now everybody knows it. I feel like I had the opportunity. I had the opportunity was within my grasp.
No, I never heard of pimento cheese. I heard of it, but I never had it.
Yeah.
You know, I never really, you know, but, you know, just for somebody that doesn't know, I'm like, what do you like eating it with? Like, I don't
everything.
Know. You know?
I'm a slack southern half Jew. I really, truly, actually grew up eating it on bagels.
Wow.
Yeah, a Linder's bagel.
Do you at least put like...
Which are actually like way more similar to a real bagel than bagels.
You put a tomato on it or anything?
Hell yeah.
Nice.
Everything. Pickle, tomato. You know, now it's really popular. You see, this was not something they did in North Carolina very often, where people put it on a burger or they grill it so it's hot. Especially the screensaver on my computer is a grilled pimento cheese sandwich. But I just remembered this. But I was actually just getting my computer fixed in the Apple store on 14th Street. And so he got it so it came back on. And the first thing that pops up is a North Carolina slaw dog and a grilled pimento cheese sandwich. It's kind of embarrassing. But what was your, like, why I like it? But now it's really popular. You know, there's like it's like so popular that it's already like jumped the shark. Like the Commodore has like a bastardized version of a grilled cheese, which is his hot, hot cheese sandwich where it's like, it's the jalapeno peppers and white cheddar, like totally grilled till it's sloppy. Yeah. So that's like, it's already been co-opted and just, you know, I've missed my chance to make my millions on my product.
Well, I think
we should put all our effort into your salsa verde.
I think the mayonnaise shop is doing well, you know?
See, I need to make pimento cheese. That's what I should do, is I should partner with them. You're a genius.
That is, I don't know.
Yes. I'm totally serious. At some point, it's probably too late this year since it's already August. We're running out of time. At some point, I want to pay my whatever it costs to rent a booth at Smorgasburg for one weekend. And I think I probably have to get my food handler's license. Or I can go work in one of my friends who has a commercial kitchen or a restaurant. And I seriously want to make pimento cheese in a certified kitchen. Maybe I might need to get a food handler's. Or maybe I'll just like tell someone what to do while I stand there. And I'm going to freaking sell my pimento cheese.
It's New York. There are ways to do things without doing anything legal.
You know? Oh, I forgot. Okay, so but we are running out of time.
Uh-huh.
Obviously, in some future distant world, you can buy my pimento cheese and John's salsa verde. But more importantly, you should buy a ticket to the... Goddamn, Joe, you should pipe up and tell me the date of... It's September 8th, the fundraiser.
September 9th.
Yeah.
You should buy... That's what you should do. You should support heritageradionetwork.org and buy a ticket to the... I think it's members only, but you become a member when you buy a ticket.
Come on
down.
It's
going to rule. And I'll make pimento cheese. I swear, if someone calls in, I will make pimento cheese for this party. All right.
Yeah, come on
down.
This
has been Meet Your Future Maker.
Bye-bye. Fortune ways that I knew. We trust in them above instinct. A seed objective review.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions at any time at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.